Audio version of Michael Leitman's blog. August 1, 2021. New Life 1313. Parents' Agreement on the Education of Their Children.
שלום לכם, תודה שאתם מצטרפים אלינו.
Hello and thanks for joining us on the New Life show with Dr. Michael Leitman. Hello, Dr. Leitman.
Hello.
And today we'd like to talk to Dr. Leitman about family education for love. We're parents, we have children, we want to teach them how to love on our way to a better and more connected life. Yael, please. On our previous shows, we talked a lot about communication within the family. And we heard you say that actually there's a need for teaching how to love, education for love. We talked about communication, but the basis for everything is for parents to teach their children how to love in the family, and later what we learn in the family is what we do in life. And on this show, we'd like to understand, what does it mean to educate for love, out of love? How do you do it? And the question we'd like to begin with is about communication from love. What does it mean to communicate out of love? I think that the only way to educate is through example. And the example has to be given or set by the parents ceaselessly. Examples have to be given by parents ceaselessly. When Owen says that we have children, we love our children, we want to raise our children, we're doing everything for our children, everything's great besides one thing, that all the time, there is need to think about this. Oh, and about what, Dr. Leitman? About our children. That the behavior they learn from the behavior, from the way their parents interact, behave, the examples that they give, and this is what's left with them for life, even when they'll be grown-ups, even when they'll be older than their parents that gave them an example sometime in life. Nonetheless, the examples that they took from their parents will be left with them till the very end. And therefore, we need to make sure that there is a good family that gives an example to the children, and accordingly, the children grow up and continue it, communicate it to their generation, the future generation. And there is no other way of how to raise them besides through example. Before we come to how do we do it, we'd like to first of all understand, what do we want to educate them for? Dr. Leitman, you have to decide. Yeah, so this is what we're asking. What do we want to teach them? What kind of love? What kind of upbringing? What kind of child would we like to eventually have? Dr. Leitman, we'd like to eventually have a child that takes life seriously, in a balanced way, that knows how to relate to other people, those that are closer, those that are further away, that if we want to know how will he educate our grandchildren, then this is what we have to show him and our attitude towards him. Yeah, and how is it different than what we have today, because throughout the shows, one of the things you mentioned is that we're not educated correctly, and this is one of the reasons for which we do not raise our children properly or correctly. So we don't even have the right picture that we should aim for. So what does it mean to educate out of love, toward love? What don't we know? We don't know how to give a proper example. First of all, consent between parents, completion between parents. What is the right or correct completion consent between spouses? First of all, you never argue in front of the kids. It's forbidden to show that they disagree about something with one another. But they always appear not two as one, but two as two that are in consent between them. Similar to being one, but still, nonetheless, they're always two. That the child knows that he has two parents, and that both of them as if are in the same opinion. It's like a thing and it's opposite. This is what we want to show. And kids take that as an example, and it's left with them for life, whether they like it or not. That's how it is. When they disagree about something, because there are different situations in the family where we disagree over. Suddenly something happens. Dr. Lightman, it's forbidden to show it to children. So if one of the parents responds in a certain way, the other parent flows with them. Dr. Lightman, keep silent. At least don't show that you think the opposite. Yeah, is there an age which you do show? Doctor, like, no, at all ages. Even when the parents are 80 and the kids are 60, doesn't matter. Still together. Yeah, and how is it different? You're talking about completion and respecting each other. Doctor Lightman, it's based on the condition of man and woman, divinity between them, which means that man and woman, their connection is stronger than each of them on their own. Do we have to tell the children something, or just, Dr. Lipton, just show an example? You can tell a child that you are sure that dad thinks the same too. Yeah, to show the single opinion despite there being two people, Dr. Levin. It's not one opinion, but it's two opinions as one. Yeah, meaning what, Dr. Levin? That it's not one, that it's not that this is how they necessarily think, but they have the same opinion because they're a couple. Yeah. And from this starting point, when we turn to education, what does communication inside the family look like? Dr. Lightman, communication inside the family is that the parents always have the same, are in the same opinion, and this is what have the same opinion, and this is what they want to show their children, and set such an example for their children. Even now that they're small, when they don't have a spouse or something yet, they have to be as if they have the same opinion. Oh, and who? Dr. Lightman. Children, between them. Because they come from the same parents. So the result is that the children have the same opinion too. Each can have his own character, his own inclinations, his own something, but still their attitude toward life, toward connection, toward whatever there is in life. And that they're very similar and close. Oh, and what does it mean about the relations between the children themselves? How do they treat each other? What kind of communication is there between them? Where our motto as parents is to bring the two to have the same opinion, Dr. Leitman, that they all try. It's not even an effort for them, that they try to be as one and to connect to one another in such a way in order to become as one. According to that same rule of man and woman, divinity between them, this is what you project onto children too. Oh, and in the optimum way, how is that expressed between the children, Dr. Leitman, that they too try to be in consent with one another and to mutually support each other? Yael, kids then are more obedient, or what, Dr. Leitman? Not only obedient, they simply feel that they came from one nest.
Yael,
these children, they, in the morning, they go to school, they go to kindergarten, they come home, they use foul language, Dr. Leitman. They go to school and to different so-called educational facilities and come back from there with different bad thoughts and words. So at home, against that, we have to see what is going on with them, what kind of deviation did they get as a result of going to these educational or education institutions, and we have to correct it as much as we can. Yeah, what do? We say that these words are improper. Dr. Leitman, no, we don't say anything about their words or about anything. We simply give them a good example against what we feel that they caught one or another kind of violence there and brought it home. Oh, and suppose he says a word that I never used or no one ever used at home. He brought it from outside into our home. Terrible word. I hear him use this word, first of all, I get a heart attack. This is the flower that I've raised. It could be some swearing, it could be some, you know, usually it's to someone else, you know, all inflated, condescending. I see it, what do I do? It's the first time I saw this happen. What do I do? Oh, up until now I gave him good examples, and suddenly this. How do I deal with it, Dr. Leitman? Well, of course, he immediately catches bad examples because they're easy. They come from his friends, from those that he takes an example from. It's not natural to take an example from grown-ups. So what follows it subtly? I see several options here. First of all, whatever he said that sounds foul, I have to take that sentence and to try and turn it into something good, into a good sentence. And to explain it to him in some way. I can even sit him down like you're sitting and writing now and tell him, oh, my beloved child, let's write nicely what you just said. Right? And then he writes the sentence down, what he said, only in a good and nice way. And that's how we write this sentence and leave it on the paper the next day or a day after. Again, there's something, and we do it again. And this way, over time, suppose over a period of several weeks, our page is filled up with sentences that are bad and that are good. We have like a vocabulary.
אני רוצה רגע לקחת טיפונת אחורה.
I want to go back a bit. We said that we have two parents, that between them they have two different opinions, but that are as one. They have two opinions, not different opinions. They have two opinions that are as one. And they only show how they complete each other and their partnership, etc., verbally and also by setting a personal example. And now there's a new baby born into this family. What are they supposed to do as two parents in order to start teaching this child how to reach love, so that this child will, Dr. Lightman, so between them there has to be a consent that at home they try to all the time generate a calm atmosphere of completion, willingness, always coming closer, attention. Yeah, from what age does a child start understanding it, Dr. Lightman, even before he's born? Yeah, during the pregnancy he feels these things, Dr. Lightman, of course, yeah. And it starts sinking in there already. That's interesting. Now, in life, we have different conflicts with the children, too, Dr. Lightman. We're making it so on purpose that there won't be. Yeah, what do you mean? He doesn't want to shower. He's sitting in the back of the car, shouting, screaming. I have to drive the car, and he's bugging his brother. Just an example, but, you know, situations from life where the parent starts getting mad, and at first he explains, then it turns into yelling. And everything becomes unpleasant at home, etc. What do you do in these situations where the child's still small? Dr. Lightman, if he's still small, you do what you need to do with him. That's it. You pay no attention to him yelling and doing something, but if we're sure that we're right and that this is how things have to be done, then this is how we do them. If he doesn't want to hear, he's yelling and suddenly, you know, goes wild, fine, we continue with what we're doing. Yeah, so at what age do we begin, Dr. Lightman? But it's education, that we show him that there are things that we have no choice, but we do what we need to do. Yeah, and how do I know as a mother that I acted from a place of love and I don't go into that place of anger, Dr. Lightman? If it's calculated that this is what I'm supposed to do, then that's what I do. Yeah, what should I tell myself in order to remain that place that you describe, Dr. Lightman, that I'm really in an educational process? Yeah, what is the harm done, Dr. Lightman? There is no harm. The child starts saying that he has no choice and that he needs to be in this process, and it won't help him to erupt and yell. It won't help him. Yeah, until what age? What you're saying now? Is it correct? More or less, Dr. Lightman. He has to see your opinion as much as possible, as much as it's going on. Let's hope that it will be so until 120. Yeah. Now, you're saying that there's no room for anger in education, Dr. Lightman. No? What for? Yeah, so a parent has to know how to take his anger and to turn it into something more educational, something more proper. And he tells himself that now I'm educating my child, so I need what? Dr. Lightman, what do you mean? What do you mean? What? I need to do what I need to do. And the child has to understand that I have no choice, that I too am in a certain framework, and this is how I need to act? Yeah, do I also have to say things in parallel, or especially do, Dr. Leitman, more do than say? But after I do, I need to see here and there, how do I insert a few educational words into it, like a lesson, the lesson learned, as if I'm not telling him, but I'm telling myself what I'm doing. Yeah, and if I look at the difference between this and the education that we have today, meaning today too, a large part of parents' guidance is not to get mad at children. How is it different than the education that we have today, Dr. Leitman? I don't know about today's education, what goes on. I have no idea about it. What you have today is something that you didn't have yesterday or the day before, and it changes every day according to whoever's maybe politically chosen for the Ministry of Education. I don't know whether does it change according to what. People change all the time and change their attitude to education. Yeah, what are the principles of this education? What should my child come out with? Dr. Leitman, first of all, the parents are parents. There's no difference between them. These are two that are as one. The children are under their parents, and the parents accept their children in a very important way for life, and also demand that this is also the demand toward the children for them to accept their parents as their upper force. And the parents, they give an example in everything. And that what they're doing is correct, and that this is how they pass it on to their children. And the children get from both parents, as from one, that this is what comes to them from the upper force. Owen, if you erupted, you got angry at your child, should you ask for his forgiveness? Dr. Leitman, it's very dependent. It depends, really. It's not. It's better not to ask for forgiveness, but to explain the measure to which he brought me to anger, that I couldn't hold myself back, but not that I'm asking for his forgiveness. Oh, and so he's to blame, Dr. Leitman, you see? Oh, and so I blame him, Dr. Leitman. I don't say that, but that's the feeling. I explain to him that I, as a parent who wants to teach him and to bring him to good states, and with all of my, you know, I'm a human being too, and I get aggravated, etc., and I couldn't calm myself down, and, you know, I erupted, and it's not good, but that's what happened to me. What is a child supposed to take from this? He's supposed to take from it that it's not good that I erupt as a parent. It's not good for the child to bring me to this condition where I erupt, and that both of us regret it happening, that it happened, but not that I ask for his forgiveness. Why not, by the way? It's not good. It's not good. I didn't see such an example in any of our sources from previous generations. It's not the proper approach. Because parents, they need to be almost like God. And there is no such thing that forgiveness or asking for forgiveness comes from their degree. Oh, and why, Dr. Leitman? Because what they're doing, it's like the Creator too. He gets mad and yells at the nation of Israel, but it is all eventually in order to educate them and to their benefit. Yeah, and How do you communicate this message that everything that's done, even if it seems harmful to them, that harms them, how do you communicate the message that everything that we do as parents is to their benefit? Dr. Lightman, only out of these kinds of examples, indirectly. Yeah, from what age can they grasp this? Dr. Lightman, depends on the parents. Yeah, because I have a feeling about my children that only when they're more grown up they start understanding, Dr. Lightman, of course. They nonetheless have to be at an age where they can already digest these things. But in that too, it is possible to bring certain examples out of which they will understand that the parents, even though that they erupt, and their eruption is a result of the children crossing a certain boundary, and there was no more room to keep things moderate. Oh, and if it's a result of me being a screwed up father, I have no patience, I'm crude, and I feel that it's because of that, Dr. Lightman, then you too need to go, you need to learn how to be a dad, Owen, for sure. But life isn't black or white. You don't start teaching me and immediately I become perfect. So when I'm in this process as a dad who wants to improve, and obviously I'm not perfect, I want to improve, I feel that in relation to the child I made a mistake now. How do I made a mistake. I feel it. You taught me something. I went home. I tried to be the best possible, you know, what I wrote down. But, you know, the only thing that came out was that I erupted. Now, the child, he saw it. It registered in him. I see it as a bad example. What I gave him is a bad example. It's the opposite. Dr. Lightman, you have to turn it into a proper example that dad is also allowed to get mad like the upper force, the creator, that also gets mad at the nation of Israel, and by that he gives them their boundaries, that there are things that, you know, it's forbidden for us to bring him to that kind of state. Look at providence, the way it takes care of us. Oh, and what do I do about my feeling that I did not function the way you taught me to? I was a bad dad, obviously. What do I do? Dr. Lightman, you have to show the kids that it is all... they're human, and we all have to understand this and help each other not to breach these boundaries. Oh, and meaning I'm human too, Dr. Lightman. Yeah, yeah, you too, and your children. Oh, and I'm asking them to help me too. Dr. Lightman, no, I don't ask that much. I show them that it's better for us not to bring each other to extreme situations. Oh, and last question. You said that all of us, we asked you, what is the purpose, the goal of educating for love? You said that all of us try to be as one, even though that we, the parents, were different, we're two. The children, you're different too. Each of you is an individual, but we try to be as one. Trying to be as one, this is the goal that I have to keep in mind in any kind of communication, Dr. Lightman. In any kind of communication, and it's more important than feeling that we're really as one, trying to be as one, there are many corrections about it. There's lots of force that corrects everything here. Oh, and what does it mean to try to be as one? Dr. Lightman, that we all the time try to bring our opinions, desires, point of views, thoughts closer together. in a way that we see what's different and what is that state where it's similar, that it is as one that we want to come to. Oh, thank you very much, Dr. Lightman. Thank you, Yael. Thank you for being with us. Till next time, all the best.
Michael Lehtman, on Quora, where did we go wrong as a world? We went wrong by thinking we could achieve a harmonious and peaceful life by means of the ego. For around 5,000 years, since the time of ancient Babylon, we have been developing egoistically. We think that we will achieve happiness via developments of technology, economics, culture and education. However, we are majorly mistaken in such thinking, and in our times, we see what we have built is crumbling. We will soon reach a state where we will stop dreaming about technical development leading us to anything positive. How, then, can we stop ourselves and avoid reaching great disasters? The solution lies in the development of human consciousness. Together with the growing understanding of the end of egoistic development and its negative manifestations, we need to also learn what the laws of nature are, without philosophizing or theorizing about them. We need to understand that, in essence, humanity's salvation lies in the knowledge of the general law of nature, its use and realization. Based on a Q&A with Kabbalist Dr. Michael Lehtman on September 9, 2006. Written, edited by students of Kabbalist Dr. Michael Lehtman. My new article on LinkedIn, on appreciation and admiration. These days, when admiration for superstar athletes, pop singers, and models sets the tone across the globe, it's worthwhile to look at the phenomenon of admiration and how we can use it positively. When chicks hatch, they naturally follow their mother. If their mother is absent when they hatch, they will follow anything big and moving as though it were their mother. We, too, have that tendency to follow someone great, someone who can direct us, and protect us, someone worth following. Our need for guidance begins at childhood. First, we admire our parents, who literally mean the world to us. Later, we learn to appreciate teachers, friends, peers who seem successful, and other people that we idolize. Without idols, we feel disoriented and uncertain where we want to go. Interested parties exploit that vital need. Through mainstream media and social networks, they direct us, where they want us, to go and make us, do what they want. They raise social media idols to stardom, turn them into celebrities that set the tone in public discourse, and make us, think that these people are the greatest. Gradually, through the influence of the social environment, our appreciation becomes admiration. This is already a higher level of relation to the object of attention. Fans are active. They have a sense of belonging and power, which stem from feelings of self-righteousness and entitlement that admiring the right people gives us. To the rulers, this is the ideal situation. When people feel complacent and entertain themselves with sports, movies, and pop concerts, they can be easily manipulated. This allows the elite to gain wealth and power undisturbed. If we are to advance to a better place than we are in today, as individuals and as a society, we must first determine the values that we want to promote. These values should coincide with the direction of the global development, which is making the world an interconnected and interdependent place. In fact, today, our level of mutual dependence has come to the point where we are dependent on each other for the most basic necessities. Since this is the case, we need social values that correspond to our condition. Otherwise, we will create a dissonance between our aspirations and values, which stem from the selfish idols we emulate, and our reality, which is entirely interconnected and requires unselfishness as a basis for existence. In fact, this dissonance is why so many people are dissatisfied with life today. The sooner we learn to value and promote mutual responsibility, caring, and consideration, the sooner life will change for the better. If we learn to respect people who promote cohesion and a sense of bonding in society, it will be easy for everyone to rise to the next level in our development, where the global village that we are is a thriving one, sustaining all its residents abundantly and easily, and everyone feels safe in it, and happy. Michael Leitman, on Quora, why is mass media bad? Nothing in the world is bad or good. Everything depends on its use. This is why we can say that our means of information and communication were developed by the human ego in order for us to now understand that we need to develop them for humanity's benefit. The problem is not whether mass media is bad or good. Mass media's good or bad influence depends on how it is used. Who benefits from mass media? Does humanity benefit, according to the general law of nature, or does it benefit primarily the interests of its owners, to raise their ratings and increase their earnings? This is the problem of mass media. In essence, it has the capability to help establish positive connections among human society, but instead it is used to divide people. Consequently, today, mass media is used in the worst way possible. This is why, on one hand, we cannot tolerate mass media, and on the other hand, we feel that life is impossible without it. Sometimes, mass media acts positively, for instance, when it criticizes certain behaviors and events well. As a rule, however, mass media leads to negative outcomes, because it is enacted by the ego of those at its reins. If mass media would start functioning for the sake of humanity's common benefit, where it would communicate the importance of building a new altruistic and positively connected world, then certainly, mass media would start playing a positive role in human society. We would then need mass media, and value it for bettering the world. Based on a Q&A with Kabbalist Dr. Michael Leitman on September 9, 2006. Written, edited by students of Kabbalist Dr. Michael Leitman. Stars and forces. A bright path is tied in the middle of the firmament. This is the serpent of the firmament, called by astronomers the Milky Line, where all the thin stars are tied and stand in it in great numbers. They are gathered and stand in it like myriad, innumerable mountains, and they are appointed over the secret deeds of the people in the world, Zohar for all. The stars symbolize the upper forces that determine our earthly path from above. Therefore, we believe that the stars determine our fate. Question: are you saying that from astrology, the science of astrologers, you can learn something about what happens at the level of matter? Answer: sure. Completely. Fortune tellers, soothsayers can tell you this. But the fact is that they will only talk about events within our world, practically what should be, and not what you can change and fix yourself. And they can't say anything about what is happening above our world. Question: if I attract the forces of, say, the Book of Zohar, can I change the story of my life? Answer: of course. Absolutely. Remark: and I thought that the mise-en-scene does not change, the attitude changes. Answer: your feelings change. The mise-en-scene changes. Whether you are standing at gunpoint, this is one mise-en-scene, or you are sitting quietly on the lawn, drinking coffee, enjoying the singing of birds is another mise-en-scene. It all depends on your choice. How you change yourself internally will change the external theater, the external environment. You have both an internal and an external state prepared for you of how to advance, either in a good way or in an evil way. It depends on what you choose, either to be pushed with a stick to happiness or to rush to it yourself. From Cab TV's The Power of the Book of Zohar number 16. If it weren't for the anti-Semites. Question from Facebook, would Israel be the way it is today if there were no anti-Semites and no Holocaust? Answer, if there were no anti-Semites and no Holocaust, no Jew would come to Israel. They would settle peacefully all over the world with great pleasure and forget that they are Jews because after the shattering and the fall into egoism, they don't want to be part of a unique group at all. Israel exists only thanks to anti-Semitism and the fact that there is hatred toward the Jews in the world, because even if they don't know it, they carry the seed of the attribute of love of others and of bestowal. It is actually thanks to the hatred that the egoistic world feels toward the Jews that the state of Israel emerged. It is anti-Semitism and the hate of Jews that sustains the state of Israel, and I would even say they are responsible for its prosperity, because the more the Jews are pressured, the more they begin to awaken and move. From Cab TV's Answers to Questions from Facebook March 10, 2019. The Crisis of the Liberal Idea. Question. Yuval Noah Harari, historian and author, is an adherent of liberal and humanistic views, but as a researcher he came to the conclusion that the liberal system is failing. What can you say about the crisis of the liberal idea itself? Answer. Humanity is a misunderstanding of itself. What kind of liberalism can there be? How can there be love for one's neighbor, participation, equality, or brotherhood if we are egoists and cannot correct our nature ourselves? Then what is there to talk about? Philosophy? It gives nothing. You need to know how to correct your nature. After that, you can talk. And until we have corrected it, we still remain little selfish animals. No matter how we cover ourselves, it is a fig leaf, under which there is nothing. From Cab TV's Challenges of the 21st Century. Introduction April 24, 2019. Sacrifice, separation of egoism from oneself. Question. We usually use the still, vegetative, and animate levels of nature for food. Previously, people made sacrifices from each of these levels. What does it mean to make a sacrifice in the spiritual? Answer. This means that you must separate a small part from everything that you receive and symbolically burn it. Previously, some small part of the food was poured or burned, thereby showing that a person receives it not into his egoistic desire to receive, but into an altruistic desire to bestow, that he takes this food only in order to be healthy and do good deeds in his good health. Everything that exists on the still, vegetative, and animate levels symbolizes the types of our egoistic desires, and depending on what we sacrifice, we seem to rise above different levels of egoism. The highest is the animate level. If a person sacrifices it, it means that he can unite with other people above this level of egoism. From Cab TV's Spiritual States July 9, 2021. The opposite world is the world of love. Question. What does it mean, I saw the opposite world? Answer. The opposite world is a world of love that exists on the qualities that are the opposite of our world, that is, on the qualities of bestowal, love, attraction, and work on one's egoism. Our world works only on egoism, on filling it. Therefore, the upper world is called the opposite of our world. In Kabbalah, there is a transition from low lishma, for myself, to lishma, for others, when I make efforts from my egoistic qualities and, as if, acquire the opposite world. By applying these efforts, I still get egoistic energy, I still try to reveal the Creator for myself, for my own sake. Then, at some point, He gives me the strength to do it purely altruistically, without any connection with myself. This is my reward. From Cab TV's Spiritual States July 2, 2021. Freedom is the attainment of the level of the Creator. Question: Freedom has been the most important thing in my life. I sacrificed a lot for my freedom, but last year one realized that I am enslaved to freedom. Where is the borderline between freedom and being enslaved to freedom? Answer: You are not defining the concept of freedom correctly. Freedom is the choice of the right goal of life that is independent of us, and which was predetermined by nature. It is the attainment of the level of the Creator. When a person uses every means in his disposal in order to attain this goal, he can consider himself a free person. From Cab TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, May 12, 2019. Means of contacting the upper force. Question: Why is it impossible to contact the upper force directly? Answer: Because each of us is an egoist. In order to create the property of bestowal, the opposite of egoism, in ourselves, we need to get together and try to influence each other in such a way as to create similarity to this property, similarity to the Creator. We, as it were, forcibly create the image of the Creator from our egoistic properties, above ourselves. To this extent, we begin to feel Him in ourselves. Question: By developed the property of bestowal, will I be able to contact Him directly? Answer: Only through a group. You do not possess such a property of your own, a private one. You remain an egoist. If you are properly connected with several more people, at least with one more, although it is very difficult, it is better with a group of 10, treat them as the Creator, in bestowal, in love, in connection, and in support, study His properties together, and try to generate them together between yourselves, then you get not only a detector, but also a generator. Question: Is the Creator a collective image? Answer: No, this is how you do it. Question: Does He also not see each of us, separately? Answer: We cannot talk about Him. We can say something only based on the model that we create between us. From Cab TV's Spiritual States, July 2, 2021.